counter, while I secure the saran wrap around the cake pan and slide it next to the other four pans. Ridge, do I finally get to meet the raging alcoholic side of you tomorrow night? Me, I'm thinking you just might. He grins and flips off the kitchen light. I walk to the living room to power off the TV. Warren and Bridget should come home sometime in the next hour, so I leave the lamp on in the living room. Ridge, will it be weird for you? Me, being drunk? Nope, I'm pretty good at it. Ridge, no, I mean Maggie. I look up at him where he's standing in front of his bedroom door, watching his phone, not making eye contact with me. He looks nervous that he even asked the question. Me, don't worry about me, Ridge. Ridge, can't help it. I feel like I've put you in an awkward situation. Me, you haven't. I mean, don't get me wrong, it would help if you weren't so attractive. But I'm hoping Brennan looks a lot like you. That way, when you're shacking up with Maggie tomorrow night, I can have drunk wild fun with your little brother. I hit send, then immediately gasp. What the hell was I thinking? That wasn't funny. It was supposed to be funny, but it's after midnight, and I'm never funny after midnight. Shit. Ridge is still looking down at the screen on his phone. His jaw twitches, and he shakes his head slightly, then looks up at me as if I've just shot him through the heart. He drops his arm and runs his free hand through his hair, then turns to walk to his room. I suck. I rush to him and put my hand on his shoulder, urging him to turn back around. He rolls his shoulder to brush my hand off, but pauses, only partially turning to face me, with a guarded expression. I step around to his front, so he's forced to look at me. I was kidding, I say, slowly and very seriously. I'm sorry. His face is still tense and hard and even a little disappointed, but he lifts his phone and begins texting again. Ridge. And therein lies the problem, Sydney. You should be able to screw whoever you want to screw, and I shouldn't give a shit. I suck in a breath. At first it pisses me off, but then I focus in on the one word that reveals the entire truth behind his statement. Shouldn't. He didn't say, I don't give a shit. He said, I shouldn't give a shit. I look up at him, and his face is so full of pain it's heartbreaking. He doesn't want to feel like this. I don't want him to feel like this. What the hell am I doing to him? He runs both of his hands through his hair, looking up at the ceiling, and squeezes his eyes shut. He stands like this for a while, then exhales and drops his hands to his hips, lowering his eyes to the floor. He feels so guilty he can't even look at me. Without making eye contact, he lifts an arm and grabs my wrist, then pulls me toward him. He crushes me to his chest, wraps one arm around my back, and curves his other hand against the back of my head. My arms are folded up and tucked between us, while his cheek rests against the top of my head. He sighs heavily. I don't pull away from him in order to text him a flaw, because I don't think he's in need of one right now. The way he's holding me is different, unlike all the times in the past few weeks when we've had to separate ourselves in order to breathe. He's holding me now as if I'm a part of him, a wounded extension of his heart, and he's realizing just how much that extension needs to be severed. We stand like this for several minutes, and I begin to get lost in the way he's wrapped himself around me. The way he's holding me gives me a glimpse of what things could be like between us. I try to push those two little words into the back of my head, the two words that always inch their way forward when we're together. Maybe someday. The sound of keys hitting a counter behind me jerks me to attention. I pull back, and Ridge does the same, as soon as he feels my body flinch against his. He looks over my shoulder and toward the kitchen, so I spin around. Warren has just walked through the front door. His back is toward us, and he's slipping off his shoes.
I'm only gonna say this once, and I need you to listen, Warren says.
He still isn't facing us, but I'm the only one in the apartment who can hear him, so I know he's directing his comment to me.
He will never leave her, Sydney.
He walks to his bedroom, without once looking over his shoulder, leaving Ridge to believe he never even saw us. The door to Warren's bedroom closes, and I turn back to face Ridge. His eyes are still on Warren's door. When they flick back to mine, they're full of so many things I know he wishes he could say. But he doesn't. He just turns and walks into his room, closing the door behind him. I remain completely motionless as two huge tears spill from my eyes, scarring their way down my cheeks in a trail of shame.
Ridge. Brennan. Gotta love rain. Looks like I'll be there early. I'm coming alone, though. The guys can't make it. Me. See you when you get here. Oh, and before you leave tomorrow, make sure you get all your shit out of Sydney's room. Brennan. Will she be there? Do I finally get to meet the girl who was brought to this earth for us? Me. Yeah, she'll be here. Brennan. I can't believe I've never asked this, but is she hot? Oh, no. Me. Don't even think about it. She's been through too much shit to be added to your list of concubines. Brennan. Territorial, are we? I toss my phone onto the bed and don't even bother with a reply. If I make her too off-limits to him, it'll just make him try that much harder with her. When she made the joke last night about screwing him, she was just trying to add humor to the seriousness of the situation, but the way her text made me feel terrified me. It wasn't the fact that she texted about hooking up with someone. What terrified me was my knee-jerk reaction. I wanted to throw my phone against the wall and smash it into a million pieces, then throw her against the wall and show her all the ways I could ensure that she never thinks about another man again. I didn't like feeling that way. I probably should encourage Brennan. Maybe it would be better for my relationship with Maggie if Sydney actually started dating someone else. Whoa. The wave of jealousy that just rolled over me felt more like a tsunami. I walk out of my bedroom and head to the kitchen to help Sydney get things together for dinner before everyone gets here. I pause when I see her bent over, rummaging through the contents of the refrigerator. She's wearing the blue dress again. I hate it when Warren is right. My eyes slowly scroll from the dress down her tanned legs and back up again. I exhale and contemplate asking her to go change. I'm not sure I can deal with this tonight, especially when Maggie gets here. Sydney straightens up, pulls away from the refrigerator, and turns toward the counter. I notice she's talking, but she isn't talking to me. She pulls a bowl out of the refrigerator, and her mouth is still moving. So naturally, my eyes scan the rest of the apartment to see who it is she's talking to. And that's when both halves of my heart, which were somehow still connected by a small, invisible fiber, snap apart and separate completely. Maggie is standing in front of the bathroom door, eyeing me hard. I can't read her expression because it's not one I've ever been exposed to before. The half of my heart that belongs to her immediately begins to panic. Look innocent, Ridge. Look innocent. All you did was look at her. I smile. There's my girl, I sign as I walk to her. The fact that I'm somehow able to hide my guilt seems to ease her concern. She smiles back and wraps her arms around my neck when I reach her. I slip my arms around her waist and kiss her for the first time in 2 weeks. God, I've missed her. She feels so good. So familiar. She smells good. She tastes good. She is good. Missed her so damn much. I kiss her cheek and her chin and her forehead, and I love that I'm so relieved to have her here. For the past few days, I began to fear that I wouldn't have this reaction the next time I saw her. I have to go really bad. Long drive. She winces and points to the door behind her, and I give her another quick kiss. Once she's inside the bathroom, I slowly turn back around to gauge Sydney's reaction. I've been as upfront and honest with Sydney as I can possibly be about my feelings for Maggie, but I know it's not easy for her to see me with Maggie. There's just no way around it. Do I compromise my relationship with Maggie to spare Sydney's feelings? Or do I compromise Sydney's feelings to spare my relationship with Maggie? Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. No right choice. My actions are becoming split directly down the middle, just like my heart. I face her, and our eyes meet briefly. She refocuses her attention down to the cake in front of her and inserts candles. When she finishes, she smiles and looks back up at me. She sees the concern in my expression, so she pats her chest and makes the okay sign with her hand. She's reassuring me that she's fine. I practically have to pry myself away from her every night, and then I maul my girlfriend right in front of her. And she's reassuring me? Her patience and understanding with this whole screwed-up situation should make me happy, but they have the opposite effect. They disappoint me because they make me like her that much more. I can't win for losing. Oddly enough, Maggie and Sydney seem to be having fun together in the kitchen, prepping ingredients for a pot of chili. I couldn't hang, so I retreated to my room and claimed I had a lot of work to catch up on. As good as Sydney is with this, I'm not as skilled. It was awkward for me every time Maggie would kiss me or sit on my lap or trail her fingers seductively up my chest. Which, come to think of it, was a bit odd. She's never really all that touchy-feely when we're hanging out, so she's either feeling a tad bit territorial, or she and Sydney have already been hitting the pine saw. Maggie comes into the bedroom just as I'm shutting the laptop. She kneels down on the edge of the bed, leans forward, and inches her way toward me. She's looking up at me with a flirtatious smile, so I set the laptop aside and smile back at her. She crawls her way up my body until she's face to face with me, and then she sits back on her heels, straddling me. She cocks an eyebrow and tilts her head. You were checking out her ass. Shit. I was hoping that moment had come and gone. I laugh and cut my hands around Maggie's backside and scoot her a little closer. I let go and bring my hands back around in front of her and answer her. I walked out of my room to a rear end pointed toward my bedroom door. I'm a guy. Guys notice things like that, unfortunately. I kiss her mouth, then pull back. She's not smiling. She's really nice, Maggie signs, and pretty, and funny, and talented, and... The insecurity in her words makes me feel like a jerk, so I grab her hands and still them. She's not you, I tell her. No one can ever be you, Maggie, ever. She smiles half-heartedly and places her palms on the sides of my face and slowly runs them down to my neck. She leans forward and presses her mouth to mine with so much force I can feel the fear rolling off of her. Fear that I put there. I grab her face and kiss her with everything I have, doing all I can to erase her worries. The last thing this girl needs is something else to stress her out. When she breaks apart from me, her features are still full of every single negative emotion I've spent the past 5 years helping her drown out. Ridge. She pauses, then drops her eyes while she blows out a long, controlled breath. The nervousness in her demeanor twists around my heart and squeezes it. She brings her eyes carefully back to mine. Did you tell her about me? Does she know? Her eyes search mine for an answer to the question she should never even feel the need to ask. Does she not know me by now? No. God, no, Maggie. Why would I do that? That's always been your story to tell, not mine. I would never do that. Her eyes fill with tears, and she tries to blink them away. I let my head fall back against the headboard. This girl still has no idea how far I'll go for her. I lift my head away from the headboard and look her hard in the eyes. To the ends of the earth, Maggie, I sign, repeating our phrase to her. She forces a sad smile. And back.
Chapter 16. Sydney. Someone is removing my clothes. Who in the hell is removing my clothes? I begin slapping away the hand that's pulling my shorts down past my knees. I try to remember where I am, why I'm here, and how I got here. Party. Cake. Pine sol. Spilling pine sol on my dress. Changing. Drinking more pine sol. Lots of pine sol. Watching Ridge love Maggie. God, he loves her so much. I saw it in the way he watches her from across the room. I saw it in the way he touches her, in the way he communicates with her. I can still smell the alcohol. I can still taste it as I slide my tongue over my lips. I danced. I drank more pine sol. Oh, the drinking game. I invented my own solitary drinking game, where every time I saw how much Ridge loved Maggie, I downed a shot. Unfortunately, that made for a hell of a lot of shots. Who in the hell is pulling off my shorts? I try to open my eyes, but I can't tell if it's working. They feel open, but it's still dark inside my head. Oh my God, I'm drunk and someone is undressing me. I'm about to be raped. I start kicking at the hands that are yanking the shorts from my feet. Sydney, a girl yells. Stop! She's laughing. I focus for a few seconds and can tell the voice belongs to Maggie. Maggie? She comes closer, and a soft hand brushes back my hair as the bed dips down next to me. I squeeze my eyes shut, then force them wide open several times until I finally begin to adjust to the dark. She puts her hands on my shirt and attempts to unbutton it. Why in the hell is she still taking off my clothes? Oh my God, Maggie wants to rape me. I slap at her hand and she grips my wrist. Sydney, she laughs. You're covered in puke. I'm trying to help you. Puke? Covered in it? That explains the massive headache. But it doesn't explain why I'm laughing. Why am I laughing? Am I still drunk? What time is it? I ask her. I don't know. Tonight, I think, like, midnight. That's it? She nods, then starts laughing with me. You threw up on Brennan. Brennan? I met Brennan? It looks as if her eyes are trying hard to focus on my face. Can I tell you a secret? She says. I nod. Okay, but I probably won't remember it because I think I'm still drunk. She smiles and leans forward. She's so pretty. Maggie is really, really pretty. I can't stand Bridget, she says quietly. I laugh. Maggie starts laughing again too, and tries to pull my shirt off, but she's laughing too hard and keeps having to pause for deep breaths. Are you drunk too? I ask her. She inhales again, attempting to pause her laughter, and then she exhales. So drunk. I thought I took your shirt off already, but your shirt keeps coming back on, and I don't know how many shirts you have, but... She lifts the edge of my shirt sleeve, which is still on my arm, and looks at it in confusion. Oh my God, I really thought I took it off already, and here it is again. I lift myself up on the bed, then help her pull my shirt off. Why am I already in bed if it's only midnight? She shrugs. I have no idea what you just said. She's funny. I reach to the nightstand and turn on the lamp. Maggie scoots off the bed and lowers herself to the floor. She lies flat on her stomach with a sigh and begins moving her arms, making snow angels against the carpet. I don't want to go to bed yet, I tell her. She flips over onto her back and looks up at me. Then don't. I told Ridge to let you stay up and play because we were having so much fun, but you threw up in Brennan's lap, so he made you go to bed. She sits up. Let's go play some more. I want more cake.
She pushes up on her hands and stands, then reaches for my hands and pulls me off the bed. I look down at myself.
But you took off my clothes,
I say, pouting. She looks at my bra and underwear.
Where do you get that bra? It's so cute.
JCPenney.
Oh, Ridge likes the kind that clasp in the front, but yours is really cute. I want one.
You should get one, I say, smiling. We could be bra twins. She pulls me toward the door.
Let's go see if Ridge likes it. I want him to buy me one.
I smile. I hope he likes it.
Okay.
Maggie opens the door to my room and pulls me behind her into the living room.
Ridge, she yells.
I laugh because I don't know why she's yelling for him. He can't hear her.
Hey, Warren,
I say, grinning when I see him on the couch.
Happy birthday.
Bridget is seated next to him, glaring at me. She's looking me up and down, probably jealous because my bra really is cute. Warren shakes his head and laughs.
That's only the 50th time you've said that tonight, although it's a little more fitting now that you're practically in your birthday suit.
Ridge is sitting on the other side of Bridget. He's shaking his head like Warren.
Maggie wants to know if you like my bra,
I say to Ridge. I pull on Maggie's hand so she'll turn around and sign to him.
It's a very nice bra,
Ridge says, staring at it with a cocked eyebrow. I smile. Then I frown. Did he just... I yank my hand out of Maggie's and turn back toward Ridge.
Did you just speak?
He laughs.
Did you not just ask me a question?
I glare at him hard, especially when Warren bursts out into a fit of laughter.
Oh my God. He's not deaf? This whole time he's been lying to me? It's been a prank?
I instantly want to strangle him, both of them. Tears sting at my eyes, and the second I lunge forward, a strong hand grips my wrist and yanks my arm back. I turn and look up at...
Ridge?
I turn back to the couch and look at...
Ridge?
Warren is doubled over Bridget's lap now. He's laughing so hard. Ridge number one is laughing now, too.
His whole face doesn't laugh when he laughs, like Ridge number two's face does.
And his hair is shorter than Ridge number two's hair, and darker. Ridge number two has his arm wrapped around my waist, and he's picking me up. Now I'm upside down. Not good for my stomach. My face is toward his back, and my stomach is slumped over his shoulder as he carries me back toward my bedroom. I look at Warren and the guy I now realize is Brennan, and then I squeeze my eyes shut because I think I'm about to throw up all over Ridge number two. I'm being seated on something cold, a floor. As soon as my mind comprehends where he's put me, my hands reach forward until I grasp the toilet. And then it suddenly feels as if I've eaten Italian food all over again. He holds my hair back while the toilet fills with Pine Sol. I wish it really were Pine Sol. I wouldn't have to clean it.
Don't you love her bra?
Maggie says from behind me, giggling.
I know it's a back clasp, but look at how cute the straps are.
I feel a hand on one of my bra straps. I can feel Ridge pull her hand away. His arm moves and I know he's signing something. Maggie huffs.
I don't want to go to bed yet.
He signs something else and then she sighs and walks into his bedroom. When I'm finished, Ridge wipes my face with a rag. I allow my back to fall against the wall of the tub and I look up at him. He doesn't look very happy. In fact, he looks a little angry.
It's a party, Ridge, I mumble and close my eyes again. His hands are under my arms, and I'm being carried again. He makes his way into his room. He lowers me onto his bed, and I roll over and open my eyes. Maggie is grinning at me from the pillow next to me. Yay, a sleepover, she says with a groggy smile. She grabs my hand and holds it. Yay, I say, smiling. Covers are pulled over both of us, and I close my eyes.
Ridge, how did you get yourself into this mess? Warren and I are both standing at the edge of my bed, staring down at Maggie and Sydney. They're asleep. Sydney is spooning Maggie on the left side of the bed because the right side of the bed is now covered in Maggie's puke. I sigh. This has been the longest 12 hours of my life. Warren nods, then pats me heavily on the back. Well, he signs, I wish I could stay and help you nurse them back to health, but I'd rather pretend I have something better to do and leave. He turns and walks out of my room as Brennan makes his way in. I'm headed out, he signs. Got my stuff out of Sydney's room. I nod and watch as his eyes fall on Sydney and Maggie. I wish I could say it was fun getting to know Sydney, but I have a feeling I didn't even meet the real Sydney. I laugh. Believe me, you didn't. Maybe next time. He waves and walks out of my bedroom. I turn and look at them, at both halves of my heart, cuddled tightly together in a bed of irony. I spent the entire morning assisting them as they alternated between the trash can and the bathroom. By lunch, Sydney's vomiting had subsided, and she made her way back to her own room. It's late afternoon now, and I'm spoon-feeding Maggie liquids and forcing her to down medicine. I just need sleep, she signs. I'll be fine. She rolls over and pulls the covers up to her chin. I tuck a lock of hair behind her ear, then run my hand down to her shoulder, where I trace circles with my thumb. Her eyes are now closed, and she's curled up in a fetal position. She looks so fragile right now, and I wish I could wrap myself around her like a cocoon and shield her from every single thing this world has left to throw at her. I look over at the nightstand when the screen on my phone lights up. I tuck the covers more securely around Maggie and bend forward and kiss her cheek, then reach for my phone. Sydney, not that you haven't done enough, but could you please tell Warren to turn the volume down on the porn? I laugh and text Warren. Me, turn the porn down. It's so loud even I can hear it. I stand and walk into Sydney's room to check on her. She's flat on her back, staring up at the ceiling. I sit on the edge of her bed, reach to her face, and brush back a strand of hair from her forehead. She tilts her face toward me and smiles and picks up her phone. Her body is so weak she makes it look as if the phone weighs 50 pounds when she tries to text me. I take the phone from her and shake my head, letting her know she just needs to rest. I set the phone on her nightstand and bring my attention back to her. Her head is relaxed against the pillow. Her hair is in waves, trailing down her shoulders. I run my fingers over a section of her sun-kissed hair, admiring how soft it is. She tilts her face toward my hand until her cheek is resting flush against it. I brush across her cheekbone with my thumb and watch as her eyes fall closed. The lyrics I wrote about her flash through my mind. Lines are drawn, but then they fade. For her I bend, for you I break. What kind of man does that make me? If I can't prevent myself from falling for another girl, do I even deserve Maggie? I refuse to answer that because I know that if I don't deserve Maggie, I also don't deserve Sydney. The thought of losing either of them, much less both of them, is something I can't bring myself to entertain. I lift my hand and trace the edge of Sydney's face with my fingertips, running them across her hairline, down her jaw, and up her chin, until my fingers reach her lips. I slowly trace the shape of her mouth, feeling the warm waves of breath pass her lips each time I circle around them. She opens her eyes, and the familiar pool of pain floats behind them. She lifts a hand to my fingers. She pulls them firmly to her mouth and kisses them, then pulls our hands away, bringing them to rest on her stomach. I'm looking at our hands now. She opens a flat palm, and I do the same, and we press them together. I don't know a lot about the human body, but I would be willing to bet there's a nerve that runs directly from the palm of the hand, straight to the heart. Our fingers are outstretched until she laces them together, squeezing gently when our hands connect completely, weaving together. It's the first time I've ever held her hand. We stare at our hands for what feels like an eternity. Every feeling and every nerve are centered in our palms, in our fingers, in our thumbs, occasionally brushing back and forth over one another. Our hands mold together perfectly, just like the two of us, Sydney and me. I'm convinced that people come across others in life whose souls are completely compatible with their own. Some refer to them as soulmates. Some refer to it as true love. Some people believe their souls are compatible with more than one person, and I'm beginning to understand how true that might be. I've known since the moment I met Maggie years ago that our souls were compatible, and they are. That's not even a question. However, I also know that my soul is compatible with Sydney's, but it's also so much more than that. Our souls aren't just compatible, they're perfectly attuned. I feel everything she feels. I understand things she never even has to say. I know that what she needs is exactly what I could give her, and what she's wishing she could give me is something I never even knew I needed. She understands me. She respects me. She astounds me. She predicts me. She's never once, since the second I met her, made me feel as if my inability to hear is even an inability at all. I can also tell just by looking at her that she's falling in love with me. It serves as further proof that I need to do what should have been done a long time ago. I very reluctantly lean forward, reach over to her nightstand, and grab a pen. I pull my fingers from hers and open her palm to write on it. I need you to move out. I close her fingers over her palm so she doesn't read it while I'm watching her, and I walk away, leaving behind an entire half of my heart as I go.
Chapter 17. Sydney. I watch as he closes the door behind him. I'm clutching my hand to my chest, terrified to read what he wrote. I saw the look in his eyes. I saw the heartache, the regret, the fear, the love. I keep my hand clutched tightly to my chest without reading it. I refuse to accept that whatever words are written on my palm will obliterate what little hope I had for our maybe someday. My body flinches and my eyes flick open. I don't know what just woke me up, but I was in the middle of a dead sleep. It's dark. I sit up on the bed and press my hand to my forehead, wincing from the pain. I don't feel nauseated anymore, but I've never in my life been this thirsty. I need water. I stand up and stretch my arms above my head, then glance down to the alarm clock. 2:45 a.m. Thank God. I could still use about 3 more days of sleep to recover from this hangover. I'm walking toward Ridge's bathroom when an unfamiliar feeling washes over me. I pause before reaching the door. I'm not sure why I pause, but I suddenly feel out of place. It feels strange walking toward this bathroom right now. It doesn't feel as if I'm walking toward my bathroom. It doesn't feel as if it belongs to me at all, unlike how my bathroom felt in my last apartment. That bathroom felt like my bathroom, as if it belonged partly to me. That apartment felt like my apartment. All the furniture in it felt like my furniture. Nothing about this place feels like me, other than the belongings that were contained in the 2 suitcases I brought with me that first night. Nothing else here feels even remotely like mine. The dresser? Borrowed. The bed? Borrowed. Thursday night TV? Borrowed. the kitchen, the living room, my entire bedroom, they all belong to other people. I feel as if I'm just borrowing this life until I find a better one of my own. I felt as if I've been borrowing everything since the day I moved in here. Hell, I'm even borrowing boyfriends. Ridge isn't mine. He'll never be mine. As much as that hurts to accept, I'm so sick of this constant ongoing battle with my heart. I can't take this anymore. I don't deserve this kind of self-torture. In fact, I think I need to move out. I do. Moving out is the only thing that can start the healing, because I can't be around Ridge anymore. Not with what his presence does to me. You hear that, heart? We're even now. I smile at the realization that I'm finally about to experience life on my own. I'm consumed with a sense of accomplishment. I open the bathroom door and flip on the light, then immediately fall to my knees. Oh God. Oh no. No, 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 no! I grab her by the shoulders and turn her over. But her whole body is limp. Her eyes are rolled back in her head, and her face is pale. Oh my God. Ridge! I crawl over her and reach for the door to his bedroom. I'm screaming his name so loudly my throat feels as if it's ripping apart. I attempt to turn the doorknob several times, but my hand keeps slipping. She begins to convulse, so I lunge over her and lift her head. Then drop my ear to her mouth to make sure she's breathing. I'm sobbing, screaming his name over and over. I know he can't hear me, but I'm scared to let go of her head. Maggie, I cry. What am I doing? I don't know what to do. Do something, Sydney. I lower her head carefully back to the floor and spin around. I grab the doorknob more firmly and pull myself to my feet. I swing his bedroom door open and rush toward the bed, then jump on it and climb over to where he's lying. Ridge! I scream, shaking his shoulder. He lifts an elbow in defense as he rolls over, then lowers it when he sees me hovering over him. Maggie! I yell hysterically, pointing to the bathroom. His eyes flash to the empty spot on his bed, and his focus shoots up to the open bathroom door. He's off the bed and on the bathroom floor on his knees in seconds. Before I even make it back to the bathroom, he's got her head cradled in his arms, and he's pulling her onto his lap. He turns his head to look at me and signs something. I shake my head as the tears continue to flow down my cheeks. I have no idea what he's trying to say to me. He signs again and points toward his bed. I look at the bed, then look back at him helplessly. His expression is growing more frustrated by the second. Ridge, I don't know what you're asking me. He slams his fist against the bathroom cabinet out of frustration, then holds his hand up to his ear as if he's holding a phone. He needs his phone. I rush to the bed and search for it, my hands flying frantically over the bed, the covers, the nightstand. I finally find it under his pillow and run it back to him. He enters his password to unlock it, then hands it back to me. I dial 911, put the phone to my ear, and wait for it to ring while I drop to my knees next to them. His eyes are full of fear as he continues to hold her head against his chest. He's watching me, nervously waiting for the call to connect. He intermittently presses his lips into her hair as he continues to try to get her to open her eyes. As soon as the operator answers, I'm bombarded with a list of questions that I don't know the answers to. I give her the address because it's the only thing I know, and she begins firing more questions I don't know how to communicate to him. Is she allergic to anything? I say to Ridge, repeating what the operator is asking. He shrugs and shakes his head, not understanding me. Does she have any pre-existing conditions? He shakes his head again to tell me he has no idea what I'm asking him. Is she diabetic? I ask Ridge the questions over and over, but he can't understand me. The operator is firing questions at me and I'm firing them at Ridge, and we're both too frantic for him even to read my lips. I'm crying. We're both terrified. We're both frustrated with the fact that we can't communicate. Is she wearing a medical bracelet? The operator asks. I lift both of her wrists. No, she doesn't have anything on her. I look up at the ceiling and close my eyes, knowing that I'm not helping a damn bit. Warren? I yell. I'm off my feet and out of the bathroom, making my way to Warren's bedroom. I swing open his door. Warren! I run to his bed and shake him while I hold the phone in my hand. Warren, we need your help. It's Maggie. His eyes open wide and he throws off his covers, springing into action. I push the phone toward him. It's 911, and I can't understand anything Rich is trying to tell me. He grabs the phone and puts it to his ear. She has CFRD, he yells hastily into the phone. Stage 2 CF. CFRD. I follow him to the bathroom and watch as he signs to Ridge while holding the phone in the palm of his hand, away from his ear. Ridge signs something back, and Warren runs into the kitchen. He opens the refrigerator, reaches toward the back of the second shelf, and pulls out a bag. He runs with it to the bathroom and drops to his knees next to Ridge. He lets the phone fall to the floor and shoves it aside with his knee. Warren, she has questions! I yell, confused about why he tossed the phone aside.
We know what to do until they get here, Sid, he says.
He pulls a syringe from the bag and hands it to Ridge. Ridge pulls the lid off of it and injects Maggie in the stomach. Is she diabetic? I ask, watching helplessly, as Warren and Ridge silently converse. I'm ignored, but I don't expect anything different. They're in what looks like familiar territory for both of them, and I'm too confused to keep watching. I turn around and lean against the wall, then squeeze my eyes shut in an attempt to calm myself. A few silent moments pass, and then there's banging at the door. Warren is running toward the door before I can even react. He lets the paramedics inside, and I step out of the way, watching as everyone in the room around me seems to know what the hell is going on. I continue to back out of everyone's way until my calves meet the couch and I fall down onto it. They lift Maggie onto the gurney and begin pushing her toward the front door. Ridge walks swiftly behind them. Warren comes from Ridge's bedroom and tosses him a pair of shoes. Ridge puts them on, then signs something else to Warren and slips out the door behind the gurney. I watch as Warren rushes to his room. He reemerges with a shirt and shoes on and his baseball cap in hand. He grabs his keys off the bar and heads back into Ridge's bedroom. He comes back out with a bag of Ridge's things and heads for the front door. Wait, I yell. Warren turns to look at me. His phone. He'll need his phone. I rush to the bathroom, grab Ridge's phone from the floor, and take it back to Warren. I'm coming with you, I say, slipping my foot into a shoe by the front door.
No, you're not.
I look up at him, somewhat in shock at the harshness of his voice, as I slip my other shoe on. He begins to pull the door shut on me, and I slap a palm against it. I'm coming with you, I say again, more determined this time. He turns and looks at me with hardened eyes.
He doesn't need you there, Sydney.
I have no idea what he means by that, but his tone pisses me off. I push against his chest and step outside with him. I'm coming, I say with finality. I walk down the stairs just as the ambulance begins to pull away. Ridge is standing with his hands clasped behind his head, watching as it leaves. Warren makes it to the bottom of the stairs, and as soon as Ridge sees him, they both rush toward Ridge's car. I follow them. Warren climbs into the driver's seat, Ridge into the passenger seat. I open the door to the back seat and pull it shut behind me. Warren pulls out of the parking lot and speeds until we're caught up to the ambulance. Ridge is terrified. I can see it in the way his arms are wrapped around himself, and he's shaking his knee, fidgeting with the sleeve of his shirt, chewing on the corner of his bottom lip. I still have no idea what's wrong with Maggie, and I'm scared that she might not be okay. It still doesn't feel like my business, and I'm definitely not about to ask Warren what's going on. The nervousness seeping from Ridge is making my heart ache for him. I move to the edge of the back seat and reach forward, placing a comforting hand on his shoulder. He lifts his hand to mine and grabs it, then squeezes it tightly. I want to help him, but I can't. I don't know how. All I can think about is how completely helpless I feel, how much he's hurting, and how scared I am that he might lose Maggie, because it's so painfully obvious how that would kill him. He brings his other hand up to mine, which is still gripping his shoulder. He squeezes both of his hands around mine, desperately, then tilts his face toward his shoulder. He kisses the top of my hand, and I feel a tear fall against my skin. I close my eyes and press my forehead against the back of his seat, and I cry. We're in the waiting room. Well, Warren and I are in the waiting room. Ridge has been with Maggie since we arrived an hour ago, and Warren hasn't spoken a single word to me. Which is why I'm not speaking to him. He obviously has an issue, and I'm not really in the mood to defend myself, because I've done absolutely nothing to Warren that should even require defending. I slouch back in my chair and pull up the search browser on my phone, curious to know about what Warren said to the 911 operator. I type CFRD into the search box and hit enter. My eyes are pulled to the very first result. Managing cystic fibrosis-related diabetes. I click on the link, and it explains the different types of diabetes, but doesn't explain much more. I've heard of cystic fibrosis, but don't know enough about it to know how it affects Maggie. I click a link on the left of the page that says, "What is cystic fibrosis?" My heart begins to pound, and my tears are flowing as I take in the same words that stick out on every single page, no matter how many pages I click. Genetic disorder of the lungs. Life-threatening. Shortened life expectancy. No known cure. Survival rates into mid and upper 30s. I can't read anymore through all the tears I'm crying for Maggie. For Ridge. I close the browser on my phone, and my eyes are pulled to my hand. I take in the unread words in Ridge's handwriting across my palm. I need you to move out.
Ridge. Both Warren and Sydney spring to their feet when I round the corner to the waiting room. How is she? Warren signs. Better. She's awake now. Warren nods, and Sydney is looking back and forth between us. The doctor says the alcohol and dehydration probably caused her. I stopped signing because Warren's lips are pressed into a firm line as he watches my explanation. Verbalize for her, I sign, nodding my head towards Sydney. Warren turns and looks at Sydney, then refocuses his attention on me. This doesn't concern her, he signs silently. What the hell is his problem? She's worried about Maggie, Warren. It does concern her. Now verbalize what I'm saying for her. Warren shakes his head. She's not here for Maggie, Ridge. She doesn't care how Maggie's doing. She's only worried about you. I bury my anger, then slowly step forward and stand directly in front of him. Verbalize for her. Now. Warren sighs but doesn't turn towards Sydney. He stares straight at me as he both signs and verbalizes for us. Ridge says Maggie's okay. She's awake. Sydney's entire body relaxes as her hands go to the back of her head and relief washes over her. She says something to him, and he closes his eyes, takes a quick breath, then opens them. Sydney wants to know if either of you need anything from the apartment. I look at Sydney and shake my head. They're keeping her overnight to monitor her blood sugar. I'll come by tomorrow if we need anything. I'm staying a few days at her house. Warren verbalizes again, and Sydney nods. You two head back and get some rest. Warren nods. Sydney steps forward and gives me a tight hug, then backs away. Warren begins to turn toward the exit, but I grab his arm and make him look at me again. I don't know why you're upset with her, Warren, but please don't be a jerk to her. I've done that enough already. He nods, and they turn to leave. Sydney looks back over her shoulder and smiles a painful smile. I turn and walk back to Maggie's room. The head of her bed is slightly raised now, and she looks up at me. There's an IV drip in her arm, replenishing her fluids. Her head slowly rolls across her pillow as her eyes follow me across the room. I'm sorry, she signs. I shake my head, not even remotely wanting or needing any type of apology from her. Stop. Don't feel bad. Like you always say, you're young. Young people do crazy things like get drunk and have hangovers and puke for 12 hours straight. She laughs. Yes, but like you always say, probably not young people with life-threatening conditions. I smile as I reach her bed and scoot a chair close to it and take a seat. I'm going back to San Antonio with you. I'll stay a few days until I feel better about leaving you alone. She sighs and turns her head, looking straight up at the ceiling. I'm fine. It was just an insulin issue. She turns back to face me. You can't baby me every time this happens, Ridge. My jaw clenches at baby me. I'm not babying you, Maggie. I'm loving you. I'm taking care of you. There's a difference. She closes her eyes and shakes her head. I'm so tired of having the same conversation over and over. Yeah, so am I. I lean back in my chair and fold my arms over my chest while I stare at her. Her refusal of help has been understandable up to this point, but she's not a teenager anymore, and I can't understand why she won't allow things to progress with us. I lean forward, touching her arm so she'll look at me and listen. You need to stop being so hell-bent and determined to have your independence. If you don't take better care of yourself, these brief one-night hospital stays will be a thing of the past, Maggie. Let me take care of you. Let me be there for you. I constantly worry myself sick. Your internship is causing you so much stress, not to mention the thesis. I understand why you want to live a normal life and do all the things other people our age do, like go to college and have a career. I pause to run my hands through my hair and focus on the point I want to make. If we lived together, I could do so much more for you. Things would be easier for both of us. And when things like this happen, I'll be there to help you so you don't convulse alone on the bathroom floor until you die. Breathe, Reg. Okay, that was harsh. Way too harsh. I roll my neck and look down at the floor because I'm not ready for her to respond yet. I close my eyes and try to hold back my frustration. Maggie, I sign, looking at her tear-soaked eyes. I love you. And I am so scared that one of these days I won't be able to walk out of the hospital with you still in my arms. And it'll be my own fault for allowing you to continue to refuse my help. Her bottom lip is quivering, so she tucks it into her mouth and bites it. Sometime in the next 10 or 15 years, Ridge, that will be your reality. You are going to walk out of the hospital without me because no matter how much you want to be my hero, I can't be saved. You can't save me from this. We both know you're one of the few people I have in this world, so until the day comes when I can absolutely no longer take care of myself, I refuse to become your burden. Do you know what that does to me? To know that I've put that much pressure on you? I'm not living alone simply because I crave independence, Ridge. I want to live alone because... Tears are streaming down her cheeks, and she pauses to wipe them away. I want to live alone because I just want to be the girl you're in love with, for as long as we can draw that out. I don't want to be your burden or your responsibility or your obligation. The only thing I want is to be the love of your life, that's all. Please just let that be enough for now. Let it be enough until the time comes when you really do have to go to the ends of the earth for me. A sob breaks free from my chest, and I reach forward and press my lips to hers. I grip her face desperately between my hands and lift my leg onto the bed. She wraps her arms around me as I pull the rest of my body on top of hers and do whatever I can to shield her from the unfairness of this evil, goddamned world.
Chapter 18. Sydney. I close the door to Ridge's car and follow Warren up the stairs toward the apartment. Neither of us said a word to each other on the drive home from the hospital. The rigidness in his jaw said all he needed to say, which was more or less, "Don't speak to me." I spent the drive with my focus out the window, and my questions lodged in my throat. We walk into the apartment, and he tosses his keys onto the bar as I shut the door behind me. He doesn't even turn around to look at me as he stalks off toward his bedroom. "Good night," I say. I might have said it with a little bit of sarcastic bite, but at least I'm not screaming, "Screw you, Warren," which is kind of what I feel like saying. He pauses, then turns around to face me. I watch him nervously because whatever he's about to say to me isn't good night. His eyes narrow as he tilts his head, shaking it slowly. "Can I ask you a question?" he finally says, eyeing me with curiosity. "As long as you promise never again to begin a question by asking whether or not you can propose a question." I want to laugh at my use of Ridge's comment, but Warren doesn't even crack a smile. It only makes things much more awkward. I shift on my feet. "What's your question, Warren?" I say with a sigh. He folds his arms over his chest and walks toward me. I swallow my nervousness as he leans forward to speak to me, barely a foot away. "Do you just need someone to fuck you?" Breathe in, breathe out. Expand, contract. Beat, beat, pause. Beat, beat, pause. "What?" I say, dumbfounded. I'm positive I didn't hear him right. He lowers his head a few inches until he's at eye level with me. "Do you just need someone to fuck you?" he says with more precise enunciation this time. "Because if that's all it is, I'll bend you over the couch right now and fuck you so hard you'll never think about Ridge again." He continues to stare at me, cold and heartless. "Think before you react, Sydney." For several seconds, all I can do is shake my head in disbelief. Why would he say that? Why would he say something so disrespectful to me? This isn't Warren. I don't know who this asshole is standing in front of me, but it definitely isn't Warren. Before I allow myself time to think, I react. I pull my arm back, then make 4 punches my lifetime average as my fist meets his cheek. Shit, that hurt. I look up at him and his hand is covering his cheek. His eyes are wide and he's looking at me with more surprise than pain. He takes a step back and I keep my eyes focused hard on his. I grab my fist and pull it up to my chest, pissed that I'm gonna have another hurt hand. I wait before going to the kitchen to get ice for it, though. I might need to hit him again. I'm confused by his obvious anger toward me for the past 24 hours. My mind rushes through anything I could have said or done to him that would make him feel this much hatred toward me. He sighs and tilts his head back, pulling his hands through his hair. He gives no explanation for his hateful words, and I try to understand them, but I can't. I've done nothing to him to warrant something that harsh. Maybe that's his problem, though. Perhaps the fact that I've done nothing to him, or with him, is what's pissing him off like this. "Is this jealousy?" I ask. "Is that what's making you this evil, wretched excuse for a human being? Because I never slept with you?" He takes a step forward, and I immediately back up until I fall down onto the couch. He bends down, bringing himself to my eye level. "I don't want to screw you, Sydney. And I am definitely not jealous." He pushes himself away from the couch, away from me. He's scaring the living shit out of me, and I want to pack my suitcases and leave tonight and never ever see any of these people again. I begin crying into my hands. I hear him sigh heavily, and he drops down onto the couch beside me. I pull my feet up and turn my knees away from him, curling into the far corner of the couch. We sit like this for several minutes, and I want to stand up and run to my room, but I don't. I feel as if I'd have to ask permission, because I don't even know if I have a room here anymore.
I'm sorry, he finally says, breaking the silence with something other than my crying. God, I'm sorry. I'm trying to.